Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. More than 200 films have featured Count Dracula of Transylvania in the title role. The cultural fascination continues with the character when the Washington Pavilion brings a radio theater adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula to Sioux Falls on February 9th. Graham Outerbridge is a theater and television actor. He plays Arthur Holmwood in the production. Outerbridge is a graduate of the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco. Graham. See, I'm already messing you up with your character. You haven't even done any acting yet. Graham, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you so much, Lori. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Tell me first, what about radio theater? Let's start there. What is it, and how does it happen?
That's such a great question. I mean, and honestly, this is my first foray into radio theater, and it's really interesting. And I get reminded every time we do a show and we get to meet people who have seen it, just how different it is from a lot of what's going on out there today. So basically, what it is it's a throwback to the days of the 30s and 40s when television wasn't as prominent a medium, and it wasn't available in every household, and people would gather around a radio and they would listen to, you know, either a serialized story or a story like this one. And so the idea is for people to experience that. So they come to the theater, and this show is kind of a blend between traditional theater and radio theater. So, you know, we're up there with costumes and there's lights and we have a set. But the main idea is to experience it auditorily, I would guess. I think. So you know, we're all at microphones, and we, the actors in the show, we do a lot of the sound effects with what are called Foley tables. So, sure. You know, if a door opens in the show, we have a door that we open next to a microphone so that the audience is experiencing that. You know, if people are writing in a journal, we're writing right underneath a microphone, so you get that experience of really getting inundated into the story, which I think is a really cool thing to get to experience in today's day and age.
So what was your audition like then? Did you have to do something non-traditional for the audition process for this piece?
It was really weird. You know, I mean, basically I went into the room and she said, now, I don't know if you've seen our shows before, or if you know what we do. And I said, I don't. And she said, okay, well, basically I want you to stand there like you've got a microphone right in front of you. And I want you to play the scene without looking at the reader, you know, your scene partner in this case, which, you know, for any actor these days is such a strange thing, because the idea is to go into the room and make a connection with the reader and be able to tell the story like that. So in this instance, you had to convey everything you were feeling and going through, but just looking out in front of you, and really creating that world and right in front of you, as opposed to having somebody else there to help you do it. So it was different. It was very, very different than what we're used to.
And so I'm curious, how do you make that connection and bring that same emotional authenticity to the role without the physical contact?
It's really difficult, and it's something that we worked on. You know, when we were in rehearsals for this show, we kind of just dove right into this whole thing so we could be comfortable with this idea of standing in front of a microphone as opposed to having those. You know, typically when you start a play, you start out by blocking and figuring out how this play moves and how it breathes and stuff like that, and how you connect with one another. But in this, you know, we don't have those things. So it's really a play that's reliant upon the actor's imagination and how strongly they can conjure all those images that you're talking about, because you don't have the visual cues from a scene partner, and you don't have these anchors, these tent poles that you can usually have throughout the course of a play that help you chart your journey and your arc through it. You don't have those. So it really requires an unbelievable amount of focus, and it's kind of exhausting. You know, you finish this show and it's almost more tiring than it would have been to just do a normal straight play. Because it just requires that much intense focus.
Is there virtually no improvising then, or does that come out anyway?
In this show, no, there's no improvising, because so much of the show is reliant upon these great, like I mentioned earlier, the Foley table. So those all rely on cues from us, like really hitting our, you know, hitting these lines that we've been rehearsing for, you know, 3 months at this point, and really just having those moments to give the audience the experience of really being in the middle of the story. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So tell me about that Foley table. How did you train to learn how to make those sound effects?
Well, LA Theater Works has a wonderful Foley artist, and he came in and really just gave us a 2 or 3 day tutorial. But the fun thing was he really just explained the concept of Foley and what it was and what was cool about it. And then it was like, okay, let's figure out. And then we literally sat down at the script and we went through with the director, and the director would say, okay, yeah, now there we need to have glasses clinking, or here we need to hear a door open, here we need to have, you know, the sound of a cross being dropped on the ground. And then we kind of got together and would test out these sounds and say, that sounds a little too high-pitched. What about if we did this? What if we did this? So it was a really fun collaboration of, like, figuring out these sounds. I mean, one of the, you know, at one point somebody is, a reporter's typing in the show, and somebody had the brilliant idea to take scissors and just click them together, and it makes this perfect sound that just sounds like a typewriter. And so we didn't, you know, we didn't have the need to carry around a 50-pound typewriter all across the country, so we just had a pair of scissors, and under a microphone it makes a wonderful noise, and it's really neat, I think.
And that's fun for the audience, too, to see how that, the difference, if they open their eyes and see what you're doing and then close them and hear a typewriter, I suppose.
And that's, you know, and that's something we always ask our audiences. We say, did anybody take the time to close their eyes during the show and not watch what was happening? And you know, to be fair, there's a lot of great stuff happening up on stage, and we've got some wonderful art happening on a big projection screen behind the actors. And so there is stuff to look at, but a lot of people will say, yeah, I took about 10 or 15 minutes and I closed my eyes and I just listened. And they say that it really opened up the story for them in a lot of cases.
Does it connect with older and younger? I mean, do you have older people who remember radio theater from their childhoods that you've connected with?
But we do. We have a few. We've had some audiences that have been, you know, on the older side that do remember, you know, how prevalent radio theater was. And then at the same time, we've had, I mean, the last show we did, we had there was a little boy in the front row who was wearing a tuxedo, and he was just really into the whole thing, and he was, you know, vocal about it, and he said what he liked and what he didn't like. So it's been, I think Dracula is such a universal story and legend and myth that I think it brings all comers, you know, which has been really neat.
Tell me a little bit about this show, this production, and your character.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, it stays close to the Bram Stoker novel. That book is, you know, it was written in 1897, I think, and it's very dense. The book is very dense, and the whole thing is told via letters and diary entries and newspaper articles. And that's the way that Stoker told this story, which was, it's just really cool, because I actually believe he began to publish it as a serial. You know, it would appear in a magazine once a week or whatever it was. So it was a really neat way to take to tell these stories. And so that's kind of the model we've adapted. And Charles Morey, who adapted it, has done a really good job at hitting the really important parts of the story and still maintaining a lot of meat for all the characters. So I play Arthur Holmwood, who is a young British lord, and he becomes engaged to Lucy Westenra, who actually ends up being the first victim of Dracula. Mm-hmm. And slowly, along with Jonathan Harker and Dr. Seward and Professor Van Helsing, the four of them, along with Mina Murray, who becomes his wife, they form this sort of group, and they start to figure out what's going on and how to best attack Dracula and how to go after him. That's all. That's.
Do you truly get to drive a stake through her heart then?
Not really, but for the context of the show, yes, really, Arthur does stake Lucy.
So I want to know what that sounds like. What's the Foley action?
Well, okay, so I should say that not every single thing is Foley, because some of it would be some, but a lot of times we'll have a sound, you know, our sound booth provides sort of what we like to say, just it strengthens the Foley a little bit, you know.
Right.
But so we had like there's wonderfully subtle moments, I think, that really make it. For example, like when Van Helsing starts to talk about we need to drive a stake through her heart, and Arthur says, okay, I'll do it, and you know, and as I reach out to pick up the stake and the mallet, so a wonderful Foley artist at the table is sort of gently holding a stake and a mallet and sort of putting them together, so you hear the clanking of wood together, and it really brings it together in a really nice way. And then, obviously, a staking is a big part in any Dracula story. So you know, we have to really, you know, we have to zhuzh that up so it's fun to watch and to listen to. So, but the stuff prior to that is Foley, and it's really wonderfully done. So it's cool. It's been a really interesting process to be part of.
So last question, what is it that you think is so captivating about the story of Dracula, which has a very kind of gruesome history behind it in reality, that people are still interested in seeing its production?
You know, I don't know if there's any one answer to that, but I do think that there is something... I think that when Stoker wrote it, I think that it feels like a little bit of it was written to sort of get past censorship and write a very sexualized sort of very like story. There's this all powerful being who can promise eternal life, and he does that to you by biting this part of your neck that I don't know. I mean, I think that there's something about it that people just want to grab onto and
the salaciousness and hold onto. It has lasted.
Yeah, I think that there's something really primal about it, and there's also something very very attractive about the whole story. It's a wonderful mix of science and faith and how the two of them interact with one another, I think. And I just think it offers something for everybody, really.
Graham Outerbridge, thank you so much for joining us today and talking. We're going to leave that conversation there. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Oh, well, thank you so much for having me.
You can see Graham Outerbridge and the cast of Bram Stoker's Dracula week from tonight at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls. Tickets are available through the Pavilion's box office.